I guess I was scared. Didn't want to really tell anyone about it. Worried about, like, if it was going to be, what the chances of survival and all that sort of thing. But also didn't want to have to explain all the time. I just wanted to compartmentalize it. So if I put it in this area, I can work on it when I need to, and while I can carry on with my life, which is focused on work. And so I guess I became these two different people.
Kia ora and welcome back to the C Word, Kiwis Talk About Cancer. I'm your host, Helen King, and this is the podcast for cancery people who want real conversations about cancer. If you like what you hear today, subscribe on Spotify or wherever you listen to good podcasts. So I'm back. I've missed you all, but it was also really good to have a short break and just to recalibrate. I don't know about anyone else, but if you were in Auckland for that last lockdown, I found it so much harder for some reason, you know, even though it was a week, as opposed to those long lockdowns we had last year, it just felt harder. And then we had the tsunami warning on the Friday of that week, and yeah, it felt like a lot. And you know that I don't think that having cancer means that you have to have a learning experience or anything like that. However, the biggest piece of wisdom I took from my own experience is to listen to my body. Our intuition often tells us when we need to stop or slow down, and that was definitely what I was hearing. I've had to think about it, and I've decided what I'll do differently is just to have more breaks throughout the year. You're still going to get great content and stories from cancery people like yourself, but I'm going to be a little bit more kind to myself this year and have those breaks when I need them. You might remember from the last episode that I've been talking with people about how cancer has impacted their family or whānau. My guests today have been impacted by cancer twice over a three-year period. In 2015, Greg Taipuri thought a persistent cough was just from allergies, but it turned out to be throat cancer. 3 years later, when he had recovered from treatment and a stroke, his wife Claire was diagnosed with breast cancer. What I found fascinating about Claire and Greg was they had vastly different responses to their diagnosis. Greg didn't tell Claire he had cancer until he was well into his treatment. Here's Greg talking about how it all began.
It was probably a little bit just before 2015. I'd been getting this constant nagging cough. I put it down to, I was staying in Hamilton at the time in an apartment that had, the night that I moved in, I think, from memory, it had rained really heavy and one of the bedrooms got flooded. Yeah. And so it was always this, there was always this dampness about the room. And so I sort of thought, you know, caught a cold, and I just sort of thought it was probably that. It was the cough, was nagging cough. And it, just by chance, I'd broken my nose, and so I was getting a specialist, wanted to have a look at it, and he put a camera down, and just as a precautionary, took it down my throat as well, and that's when they found the tumour. That was removed, and I did radiation in 2015. Moving forward a little bit too quickly, but 2015 I'd moved down to Wellington to work in Parliament. The doctors come back with the tests to say, hey, it was cancer. You got some in your spine, because I was having back problems as well. It was just a really strange time for me in 2015, because I was working in Wellington, luckily staying with the whānau. Claire and the kids were up in Rotorua, where we were based. I don't know what went through my mind at that time, but I think it was just the generation that I grew up in. It was sort of like you didn't really talk about stuff, you know, you held your feelings inside, sort of thing. And so for me, I was just so focused on work, wanting to get work done. It was quite a stressful job. I was a press secretary in Wellington, so high pressure, long hours, not eating that well. But for me, it was like that was the centre of my being at that stage because I wanted to be really good at it. It was a big jump to move to that sort of job. For me, I guess when I look back on it now, I guess I was scared. Didn't want to really tell anyone about it. Worried about, like, if it was going to be, what are the chances of survival and all that sort of thing. But I also didn't want to have to explain all the time. I just wanted to, I'm almost compartmentalised it. So if I put it in this area, I can work on it when I need to, and while I can carry on with my life, which is focused on work. I guess I became these two different people. Greg, the guy who worked in Parliament and had a job that needed its full attention 24/7. The other person was Greg, the guy who's got cancer, but I'll get the treatment as I go along. What I didn't realise at the time, because I was living with, like I said, whānau, and I said to Claire's uncle, look, I don't want to let anyone know. I only told them because I was living with them, and I thought there were going to be times where I might be sick and I'm going to have to explain it. So I said to him, look, I just want to keep it to myself right now, and I just want to get through it and concentrate on work. And he respected that for a wee while. Until he one day he sort of says, look, mate, it's unfair on your family, you know, and it's unfair on us, to be honest, because we're hiding the secret. What if something went wrong and, you know, all of a sudden, well, we knew about it. You know, all of those consequences. I say, okay, we'll do that. I'll tell them. And so I did. And it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. He was pretty cool about it. You know, I mean, everyone got a bit upset about it. Well, they got upset. But I was like, by that time, I was sort of so fixed on the journey. I'd gotten over the, I've got cancer. You know, it's like now I've got a treatment to get rid of cancer. So that's how I sort of took it. And it wasn't until Claire got cancer that I really, really realised how selfish I'd been because, you know, you don't realise, while it is you who's going through cancer, your family are affected by it as well, and they have feelings about how it is and all of that. But my stubbornness often made it that, well, I just want to get it done and not have to justify what I'm doing. It's kind of easier that way, and then not the best way of doing it. And Claire's journey began.
Yeah. Claire, did you know he'd gone for surgery?
No, I don't think I did. I didn't know until quite further down his journey from my uncle saying to him, actually, it's time you need to be telling myself and the kids and the rest of the whānau that I found out. So, yeah, that was a shock and, yeah, quite a few different emotions in that time. But at the same time, I was wanting to kind of respect Greg's wishes on how he kind of handled it,
Just a little story on that, and kind of when you think back on it now, it's a little bit funny, but at the time, I guess it wasn't. There was a weekend that Claire was coming down, and I thought, right, this is the weekend that I'm going to tell her, because, you know, my uncle said, yep, you got to tell her. So, she's coming down this weekend, so I'll tell her. I think the day that you flew in, one of Claire's aunties had passed away from cancer, and so I was like, not a good time. I guess it was that male thing again. When is it going to be a good time? But I found a good enough excuse not to do it, I guess. But I sort of felt at that time I didn't want it to, you know, you're grieving about your auntie. I don't want to jump in on top of that and say, oh, by the way.
Yeah, so, surprise.
Yeah, surprise. So the next time I told her was our daughter's 21st.
Yeah, you came back for our daughter's 21st. Yeah. So the timing was never going to be right.
It's really interesting because I relate to a lot of that because I compartmentalize all of it. Mm. And, you know, I went to my oncologist appointment by myself, you know, the one where they tell you what it is, the sort of nuts and bolts and those sorts of things. And I think part of it was that I wanted the information first to kind of process it. But I think there was part of me thinking, if this is really bad, I want to buffer that from my family.
Yep.
And I drove myself to my radiation. But, you know, if there was elements of that going on for me as well. And I think that,
you never really know how you're going to react to a cancer diagnosis. And I think, you know, I relate to that, just wanting to dig in and get through. And yeah, it makes perfect sense to me. But at the same time, knowing that our diagnosis ripples through our family and friends, and it can be really challenging for people to process that.
Just one thing I guess I'd like, want to make clear, Helen, is, you know, there might be guys, men, women, who are going through that same journey right now and doing the same thing. And I'm not saying, look, I'm not saying that what you're doing is wrong. Whatever decision you make at that time, because you're going through it, you know, is the best decision. As long as it's an informed decision, that's your decision and you've got to go with it. You can't second guess it. I realised afterwards that it would have been better. You know, that's me. I'm not saying that whoever, if they happen to be listening, that what you're doing is wrong. You know, you know what's best for you at the end of the day.
Yeah. Oh, completely. Because I think back to driving myself to radiation every day and thinking, that was bonkers.
I'd be sitting in meetings at work and my nose would bleed, or I'd turn up at work and I'd look like a raccoon, my eyes were black.
And
people would like, go home. Because, you know, work had to know. And they'll go home. But I think through that whole period when I was going through my treatment, I may have taken a week off just because I'd gotten a cold and just didn't have the energy. But most of the times I just went to work because it was kind of a remedy for me in a sense, because I was too busy thinking about that it didn't put my mind on.
Yeah, it can be a double-edged sword, eh? Really focused on your work.
Absolutely. And so you go through your own cancer experience with throat cancer. I understand you had a stroke as well.
You know, why just have one major incident? I'll go with another one. And I finished that, I was cancer-free, finished that parliament and was working, got a brand new job, and I'd moved back to Rotorua. First weekend to that job, it was my weekend home, and I was cooking an omelette. Yeah, and I was like, what the heck? What's going on with this omelette? It's just like, you know, not working. And I was getting real ho-ha with it. And she was in the bedroom doing whatever she was doing. And I yelled out to her to say, basically, you know, breakfast is ready. But I sounded drunk. You know, I was like, what was that? And Claire was just going, what? And I was going, well, breakfast is ready. You know, but I said, never mind. And I just went and sat at the table and started eating. And it looked ugly. You know, I was like, it didn't look edible at all. But I was just sitting there eating it. And then Claire walked in and I said, I don't feel well. And
took one look at him and half of his face had dropped down. And I was like, I knew the signs. So went and got my daughter and her boyfriend, and then
first he sort of said, are you joking, you know?
I said that afterwards. I was trying to get you to smile, and it was quite a bit of a stressful morning, eh?
And when we were going to the hospital, you know, I was in the ambulance, I was going, oh my god, it's week one of a new job. I'll be right by Monday. I'll be in the car, because I was travelling to Hamilton, from Rotorua to Hamilton. It's over an hour's drive. I said, I'll be right by Monday. Oh, I won't say anything. I'll make sure I'm ready by Monday.
And you know, that wasn't to be, eh?
No, it was not to be. Had to learn to talk again, walk properly again, and just everything that you take for granted.
And then Claire gets cancer.
I was thinking, are we going to catch a break soon, eh? You know? But yeah, I did, I guess. Shall I talk about my journey?
Yeah, because I understand you'd had a mammogram.
Yes.
But that wasn't how it was detected.
That's right. I found it myself. So I guess with me, cancer's something that runs quite prominently on my maternal side. Like, my mum had cancer, my grandmother, and various aunties and uncles. So I was really always quite vigilant with my mammogram. So I had it, I think it was November 2008, and I got the letter to say I was all clear. And the very next week I was lying in bed and I just felt a lump at the top of my breast. I thought, that's weird. I guess for some reason or another, a couple of weeks passed, then I went to the doctors and they said, yep, there's a lump there. So we did the biopsy, the ultrasound and the MRI. It turned out that there were four tumours in there. From one little feeling, one lump, there's actually four tumours in there. Yeah, that started the whole my year of healing.
What sort of treatment did you have?
In March, I had a mastectomy with an implant. And then when I recovered from that after a couple of weeks, or 3 or 4 weeks, sorry, I had 5.5 months of chemotherapy. And then after that, another couple of weeks, I had 3 weeks of radiation therapy in Waikato. And then on to some letrozole, to just help sort of block the hormone. So that was basically a whole year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of treatment.
It is. It's really interesting because I was a few months after you then. So 2018 was the year that I had cancer.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was just after Queen's birthday weekend, because I just started a new job, and that the Sunday before I found the lump, and then I went to work. I totally understand. Start a new job, but you don't want to be sick.
Yeah, you and Greg are so many similar things, eh?
You must be a very intelligent woman.
Stubborn.
Yeah,
and then it was, I actually think from finding the lump to mastectomy was about 4 weeks.
Mm.
And then into that roller coaster.
Yeah, you just get onto a bloom, it's like a chain of a conveyor belt, eh? Really?
Yeah.
The interesting thing, Helen, was, you know, we sort of tell people about what was going on, you know, hey, cancer, then a stroke, and clear cancer, and the natural reaction from everyone, which is, you know, natural, of course, and normal way.
Kind.
It's like, oh my God, you poor things. But we never really looked at it that way, eh? Mm. We just took it as life was making us resilient, which, you know, so we just took everything as it went. When things were bad, we always could see there were other people who were worse off, you know.
Mm.
So we never sort of really went down that way. And funny thing was, like, because when Claire was going through her journey, I decided, well, I'm going to, you know, support her in every way that possible. So I'd wear a mask. I'd stop, you know, people couldn't come around and all of that sort of stuff. So I was wearing these masks to doctors, waiting rooms for surgeries and all of that long before it was a common thing. You know, you'd have kids who'd just naturally stare at you. And so every time I'd look at them, I'd just, like, start reaching down into my pocket and pretended I'd pull out a gun and I'd just start pointing and go, pew, pew. You know, just, but nowadays, you know, everyone wears them. So, in the end, I sort of said cancer made us resilient and ready and trained us for the lockdown, because we were already isolated. We're already wearing masks. You know, we didn't really ever go out.
No.
So it was just a one big holiday for lockdown for us. We kind of enjoyed it, eh?
That's so interesting, isn't it? Because I thought in that first few days of level four last year, I started thinking, God, this is very familiar. Yeah. I thought, this is just like being on chemo.
Yeah.
It was exactly the same. And I really like what you said about resilience. I had just this few years of, one thing after another happening, and then I got cancer. And, you know, it was very challenging for lots of different reasons. Mm. But sometimes I think back at the things that happened leading up to it, and I think they almost prepared me for what happened. Yes. And to be that sort of, you know, you just have to get through this next bit. You just have to, it's, I don't know if I'm explaining it that very well, but it just sort of, I felt like I probably handled it better than if it had happened a few years before.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Totally, I can think back on certain things and I was thinking, this is all kind of starting to line up and make sense, eh? Mm. Yeah, definitely, definitely.
There were two real turning points, I guess, for me during that journey, through Claire's journey. Right at the beginning, you know, you're always waiting on results, you know, like that test, we got to have a biopsy and all of that. So you sort of think, oh, hopefully it'll be good news. And it was not. And then we did the next thing. I can't quite remember what it was. But it was just test after test, and they were always going the wrong way for us. And it was like, man, when are you going to cut us a break? It was the biopsy. It was the biopsy into the liver.
Yeah.
Because it was, they found something there. And I was like, man, this is, you've got to give us a break. It just can't, we can't keep on getting bad news. And it was finally the good news, you know, like, hey, nah, it's nothing. And it was, even though it was the most painful thing that Claire went through, or one of the painful things that she went through.
Yeah.
For me, it was kind of that turning point, a slight turning point. We go, finally, you know, hey, so no, this is, you know, yes, we will get some good news, we'll get some bad news. So there was that one. And the other big turning point for me was we went on a retreat, a wellness retreat. And I guess I'll get Claire to talk about that. But that was a real turning point for me because it changed my attitude. So,
like when you first get diagnosed and you get introduced to your nurse specialist, you get a bag of all these pamphlets. And in this was one with Arateka Cancer Trust, and it had things like holistic meditation and retreat and well-being, and it really resonated with me. So I just kept it there, and then got to know one of the trustees, June Grant, who is one of the founding trustees. And so we decided to go on it in October, and it really was a turning point for us, eh?
Yeah.
Because it was at a time in between my chemo and radiation when I was actually really tired. And then we went to this retreat, which I think was 3-4 days. And as each day passed, it just felt like I was doing more and more grounding stuff, more and more healing. And, it was really good.
I grew up with meat and potatoes, you know, like it was one of that generation. You don't have a meal unless there's bread, meat and potatoes. But this retreat was plant-based diet. And I thought, I'll just, you know, go there with an open mind. You have to when you're on a cancer journey, you've got to have an open mind for everything and just see what works for you. And we came away from that journey vegetarian.
Yeah.
You know, we went hard, and it was a huge thing for us. And I'll still have meat now and then, but it's not, it's taken lots out of it.
Yeah. I mean, they do lots of things like meditation, healing, you know, grief and dying. Well, they do sessions on that. There's all sorts of things, and it just really resonated with us.
The real evidence base, you know, so, you know, I was one of those cynics before cancer. We go, bloody jumbo nonsense and all of that, but man, you've got to be open. You've got to be open to stuff, especially you guys out there, you know, men, we're terrible for hiding our feelings and trying to be that macho man, and sometimes you're going to have to change your lifestyle to adapt to what happens.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because I went to a retreat that they had up here because I found, I mean, having cancer is hard and going through chemo and all those things are challenging, but there's an end to it. What I found really hard was the after bit and trying to rebuild my life and the sort of mental, emotional effects and things. And I went to a retreat at the end of 2019, and it just happened to come up in my Facebook feed, and I thought, oh, I'll look into it. And I was cynical as anything because I was just full of emotions, and that's my way of, you know, sort of not feeling things. It's just sort of... And it was just this weekend. It sounds like very similar things where we talked about, our emotions and meditation and healing the spirit, whatever that means for you, and nurturing our bodies and just connecting with other people who'd had that same experience where you could
really
say,
yourself,
actually,
sounds very similar.
Being able to talk about the grief and the sadness and it being... Not that you're wallowing in it, but just being able to say that out loud, that I feel really sad that this happened to me, or...
You know, those sort of wellness retreats do give you tools. It gives you tools to help cope with things that you probably wouldn't have been able to cope with without that help. I mean, when your car breaks down, you don't fix it yourself. You've got to learn how to do it, or you get an expert in to do it. Otherwise, there's that same, like... Oh, I can't quite remember how it goes, but it's like, you know, if you're doing something stupid and you carry on doing stupid, you can't expect it to be a different result. So I know I'm not phrasing it correctly, but along those lines, be open to experimenting, have a crack. Knowledge is power. That's the other one. Knowledge is power.
Yeah.
So how have you implemented that stuff in your day-to-day life since? Have you found it easy to adapt? Because I know it sounds like Greg and I have that similar thing where, you know, we throw ourselves into work or you want a project to sink yourself into. What's changed?
We live in Wellington now, eh? So our lifestyle's kind of changed. completely in that we made a decision last year. You know, COVID as well as our last 2 years have brought about big changes for us. So we've kind of worked out a 10-year plan of what we want to do. And amongst that, Greg had an opportunity for a new job in Wellington. Mm-hmm. My job in Rotorua was finishing. And our kids are older and they're independent. So we relocated to Wellington. Greg's working and I'm studying Reo Māori, something I've wanted to do for years. So going through those sorts of times makes you appreciate just how precious time is. And so if you really want to do something and you've got the means, then I think it's
sometimes
important
it's about
to have,
taking
it,
risks,
have a go. Yeah,
I mean, like, so I'm back in Parliament, back doing press secretary work. And I mean, there was a huge thing, like, this time last year, you know, we were in lockdown. Today is 1 year since lockdown, officially lockdown.
Yeah.
So there was no thought in the future of me being back in Wellington. I loved the job, but I just thought, man, it's a lot of work, a lot of hours, and my health. You know, it had to change. It had to do a lot of changes in my lifestyle when it came to health and well-being.
Mm.
And we were at the retreat again because we're now trustees. We got dragged into it and we're trustees of the Arateka Trust. And we were at the retreat when I got a phone call. Hey, you're interested in going back down to Wellington? I was like, had no thought of doing it, but why not? You know, so we talked about it and now we're down here. Our daughter's living in our house up in Rotorua and we're staying in a one-bedroom apartment right next to the motorway. It's
and we enjoy
great
it.
Life.
It's just,
great
you know,
life.
We're in a, it's a bit of an adventure.
Yeah.
So I guess
Maybe,
you know, if we hadn't have gone through some of the hard times we've been through, we might not have done such a risky thing, you know. We're both in our early 50s, so we're not in our 20s, you know.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool here, so far so good.
One of the things, just as a little tip, in regards to coming out of the retreat, you know, because there are some big changes that have to happen when you do that sort of thing, and they're quite dramatic, you know, like, for instance, with going vegan, and we're going, oh, my God, I'm not going to cook bloody carrots and broccoli every day and just not eat properly. So we thought, let's make it easy. We'll go and do the...
My food bag?
Yeah,
or,
and they have...
Yeah.
And so it actually made it easier for us because we didn't have to try and make up a special diet. They did it for you. So, you know, it was those little tips. It's a big change when you come away from that thing. I mean, we were lucky because we did it together.
Yeah.
But for people who do it by themselves, you know, and then go back to their partners, it's life-changing. And then all of a sudden it's kind of a scary thing because you've changed, but everyone else has sort of remained the same. And my God, you've changed. You know, you got to try and make things easier for yourself, and you can't beat yourself up when it falls over because it will fall over, you know, and that's about just resetting the button, pressing it again and getting back up and going again.
Mm. Well, thank you for sharing your story with me. It's been really cool to hear it and kind of identify with parts of it and sort of that normalise it. That I think when you go, oh yeah, I did that.
You're not stubborn. You're not stubborn. You're just a really intelligent life.
Oh, okay. I'll go with that.
Hey, thanks for having us on your show.
The C Word Kiwis Talk About Cancer is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM and anytime at planetaudio.org.nz/the C Word. Thanks for joining me and I'll see you next time.
And from the side, you can see I know the type. They got drunk, they got guns, and yes, they wanna fight. And they see a young couple having a time that's good. And the Eagles wanna test their brother's manhood. So they came to test me, cause of my heritage. In the loud, bright colors that I wear. I was a target, cause I'm a fashion misfit. And the outfit that I'm wearing, brother's dissonant. Wanna stay calm and break leave me be. Uh-huh. Parts of my date's anatomy. Why, Lord, your brothers have to drill me? Drill cause me. If I stop to hit this man, they'll have to kill me. You see, cause I don't like killing Africans. But he wouldn't stop, and I ain't Ice Cube. But I had to take the brother out for being rude. Hey! And like I said before, I was mad about it. It took three or four cops to pull me off
of him.
But that's the story, y'all, story, of a black man. Get stomped by an African.
You see, I want to lock in your heart. Yeah. you now. Squeeze, yeah.